All right. Well, howdy, y'all. Welcome back to Once Upon a Time in Texas with episode number 61. I'm your host, Michael Mitchell. Normally, this is where I get into kind of my random stuff about the week, but I've got a guest in here with me, and I've got my buddy Jacob Fields here. How are you doing, Jacob?
Pretty good.
Since you just took a big cup of, or drink of coffee. Yep. Caught you right off. So, Jacob is a buddy of mine, has been for, I don't know, what are we, like 3 or 4 years now? Something like that?
3 years.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years, something. He's a fellow Rotarian, a scouter. I met him through Scouts, specifically Cub Scouts, when I was the Cub Master, with your middle son, who is going up to Arrow of Light next year, so 5th grade.
Correct.
Yep. And so then you're going to be up in the troop with us. And
By the end of next school year, I'll be in the troop.
That'll be exciting. You'll love it, man. We'll have a good time. And so we're going to discuss a guy named Littleton Fowler. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure a lot of you guys out there on the old interwebs just went, who? Which is the exact same reaction that I had.
And if you're living in Texarkana, you might say, you mean Dr. Littleton Fowler, who's got a practice down the street?
Yeah, no.
It's like, no, but one of his ancestors.
Nice. So he was is considered one of the first Methodist pastors in Texas, correct?
Yes.
All right, so we're going to look into that. Of course, before we get into this, I always want to thank our sponsors. That's me and Victory Home Loans. If you know someone moving really anywhere in the United States, mostly here in Texas and Oklahoma, send them my way. Send them over to themichaelmitchell.com, themichaelmitchell.com. And would love to work with them, help anybody. I was actually, that's why I was a little late getting the door. I was helping a friend of mine through a loan question, procedure, irritation, you know, that he was having.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I couldn't help him with a loan, but I was able to point him in the right direction on how to get done what he needed to get done. So,
indeed.
Advice is always free, I guess. And of course, you know.
For now.
So remember, when you work with me and Victory Home Loans, we sell dreams, not mortgages. Doesn't that sound nice, Jacob?
That's a great slogan.
I like that. Yeah, sell dreams, not mortgages. All right, so where did this week's idea come from? Well, so as we often do, Jacob and I sit around and chew the fat, usually longer than our wives intend for us to or like us to. But he is a faithful listener of Once Upon a Time in Texas. Well, I don't know about faithful, but you listen to it every now and then.
I've listened to several episodes.
Not all 60?
Not all 60.
We're getting there. We'll work on you. It's a work in progress. But I remember you came up to me after Rotary and you said, why don't we do a podcast on this Littleton Fowler guy? And I said, who the heck is that? And you told me he was one of the first Methodist ministers in Texas, pastors.
And I said, he has the most prolific streak of ministry over a 19-day period that will never be recreated.
And that just, of course, grabbed my attention. And then we sat and chatted for a little while longer, and you gave me lots of facts and interesting history about this fella. And So let's get into it. I mean, who is this Littleton Fowler guy? Where did he come from? Give us some history. I want to hear about this guy.
So, Littleton Fowler, born 1803.
All right, so back in the day.
Yeah. When Texas was still part of Mexico.
Yep.
He was born in Tennessee.
All right.
Does that sound familiar for Texas revolutionaries?
Yeah, I feel like we know a guy or two that came to Texas from Tennessee.
Several of the Republic of Texas founding fathers are volunteers from Tennessee.
I even think there was a guy, a pretty famous guy, quote that said, you may all go to hell and I'll go to Texas.
Yes, I think, was that Boone or was that Bowie or Houston? I don't remember
or
which
Crockett.
One. Crockett.
It was also Davy.
Yeah.
I think it was Davy Crockett.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? To be honest, I don't remember.
All of those guys that we just named spent at least some time in Tennessee before making their way finally to Texas for the Revolution. A lot of people don't realize that the revolution of Texas was mostly imported by Anglo settlers from the Northeast. Sam Houston was originally from like the New Jersey, New York area.
Yep.
And in New York, they don't say Houston, do they?
They say Houston.
They say Houston. So we've been pronouncing Houston all wrong all this time.
Maybe they were pronouncing it wrong until they got to Texas.
Because good old Sam Houston was actually Samuel Houston III.
Wow. So that sounds a little uppity.
Yeah, but Sam Houston sounds nice and Texan, so we go with that one.
Now, all of these guys came to Texas just out of the goodness of their heart to help out fellow neighbors, correct?
One could argue that, sure. There's evidence that suggests there were perhaps other motives, some perhaps financial motives. The other thing about it is they were all Masons. I don't know if we want to contribute to Mason conspiracies. Generally speaking, I have a high opinion of Masons, but that's how a lot of these guys knew each other, not only during the American Revolution, but even the ones that decided to come to Texas and fight against Mexico.
That's interesting. However, our podcast is not on these guys.
No.
So let's circle back around to this Littleton Fowler.
Yes.
So 1803 in Tennessee.
1803. He grows up at the age of 23 years old. He becomes licensed to preach in the Methodist Church.
Okay.
So that's the equivalent of like a licensed local pastor. And then at the age of 25, he's ordained as a deacon. And then at 27, in the year 1830, he's ordained as an elder in the United Methodist Church.
So that's a pretty big deal. And this is where I want to take a pause here. So is there a difference between a minister and a preacher?
So a minister and a preacher, yeah, anybody technically can preach. It's preferred in Methodist churches if the person speaking is doing the sermon is at least licensed as a local pastor, being licensed to preach is what they used to call it, or a certified lay speaker is something we have for licensed to preach would be a clergy, and lay speaker would be a laity. Clergy, laity, it's people who are vocational in ministry and everyday people in the church.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
And you know what? I think we forgot to mention, though, that you are a Methodist minister.
Yeah.
Here in Wichita Falls, on top of being a Rotarian and a Scouter and a father of three.
Right. So I was licensed as a local pastor, or licensed to preach, so to speak, in 2014. I think that would have made me 26 years old, I believe.
Okay.
So just a little bit off of Littleton's pace here. But gotcha. Hopefully I can change pace from him very soon.
Because
he only lived to be 43 years old.
Okay, so you got more time.
I hope I got a little bit longer of a runway.
All right, so Methodist and preacher, minister and preacher, kind of interchangeable.
I was licensed as a local pastor in 2014. I graduated seminary in 2017 and was appointed to serve as the solo pastor, the senior pastor, the main guy at Blue Mound United Methodist Church.
Okay.
And I was there from 17 to 20.
All right.
And I came out here to Wichita Falls in July of 2020. That's a whole different conversation moving in the middle of a pandemic. But, that's for a different podcast.
Which we may start our own at some point, right?
Maybe.
We've been chatting about that. Don't know what we're going to talk about.
Our wives both know we need more excuses for you and me to talk more.
Okay, but let's...
Yes.
All right, so let's go to... So, hang on. Let me think. Minister and preacher are kind of more or less interchangeable for the most part.
Basically, yeah.
And priest is mostly reserved for like Catholic and Episcopalian.
Yeah, it's a term that's more used by those denominations. But for the most part, people, when they think of a priest or a minister or a pastor, they're thinking of the person that leads a congregation on Sunday morning.
Right.
And so, generically speaking, you could consider it all mostly the same.
Okay. Now, you said basically three levels here on Littleton Fowler. You said...
Yes. Preacher, he was licensed to preach.
Licensed, and then...
Then he was ordained as a deacon, and then he was ordained as an elder.
So what's the difference with those? Because that's...
So they used to do it in that order, where deacon was a level of ordination on the way to becoming an elder, whereas now a deacon and an elder are separate ordinations. Their focus, their emphasis is different things.
Okay.
So whereas an elder is appointed to serve wherever the bishop sends them.
Okay.
A deacon is intended to stay put in a particular location longer and be more of a bridge between the church and the community.
Gotcha. Okay. So the fact that he did this in a 4-year time frame is really something, even...
It's reasonable. Okay. If the ordination process works ideally, that should be about how it goes. But the ordination process is long and arduous and can have lots of speed bumps on the way, and that's something that I've run into. I'm stuck in the stage of being a provisional elder, which is equivalent to a doctor in their residency period. They've gone before the board,
okay,
and they've already finished med school. They've gone before the board, and they're practicing as a doctor in the hospital.
Okay.
But there's, in order for them to be considered a doctor forever, they have to, at the end of their residency, pass another round of boards.
Gotcha. Well,
that's where I am, is I'm trying to get through the Board of Ordained Ministry to become fully ordained as an elder. And I'm kind of running into some hiccups there with my writing work specifically. Well, I'm not great at writing.
Aren't we all, though? I mean,
sometimes I am, but not in necessarily the academic sense.
Maybe this is God's challenge for you. That's,
oh, yeah.
Kind of like waiting on mortgages to come in for me at themichaelmitchell.com. All right, so yeah. Littleton Fowler, he's an elder at 27,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty good. So tell me more about this guy, because I want to hear, I want to hear what this cat did.
So, getting to that prolific streak of ministry, the Texas Revolution happens in what year?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me some. I don't remember.
1836.
Okay, that's right, 1836.
So 1836 into a little bit into 1837 is when they're kind of winning by 1837.
Right.
So in 1837, another group of volunteers are headed to Texas, but not as a fighting force, as a group of people to build society and culture in the new republic.
Yeah, so we're bringing in the people to start building towns and culture and...
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Taming the West.
Pretty much. And so Littleton sets out with two other pastors. Forget their names at the moment. Hold on. Robert Alexander and Martin Rutter.
Okay.
The three of them set out from... Tennessee at the same time. Along the way, Littleton recruits a young man to become a minister by the name of John B. Denton. Have you ever heard of Denton, Texas?
Yeah. I've been through it a time or three.
John Denton is the namesake of Denton, Texas, and he was brought to Texas by Littleton Fowler. Now, if you're sympathetic to the cause of the native people, you're probably not a big John Denton fan, because not only was he a Methodist minister, but he was also a captain in the Army of Texas and died during a raid on a native encampment in the Fort Worth area. Okay. So some people aren't big fans of John Denton. But
it's important to also, talk about because history is not always pretty. He was also a
minister. Exactly. History is not pretty. He's also a minister and was brought to Texas by Littleton Fowler.
Okay.
He gets separated from those other two preachers because of illness. So they had first come across up in the Texarkana area. But then he goes back and then south and then comes back across the Red River down a little south of Nacogdoches and comes into the town of St. Augustine, Texas. And he arrives there on October 19th of 1837.
Okay.
So, imagine dusty old west town. There's a two-horse town, you know, just a couple of shops built in wood and a dusty street there. He posts up, ties up his horse, and starts preaching outside the main spots there. There's the post office, there's the saloon, the hotel, all that jazz that's there. And he starts preaching three times a day.
So the Lord has called him, and he is telling the good word to anybody who listens.
He just shows up, and it's like, all right, I'm going to start preaching.
Okay.
And some people might think about, like, annoying street preachers and think about this guy, and you might be able to picture what he's doing a little bit that way, but it's at that time it was not quite the same as the street preachers we have in today's day and age.
Right.
But remember, there was no church for him to preach in.
So he's just laying it down in the street.
Laying it down.
Okay.
And so he preaches, and apparently he must be pretty good at preaching, because within a week he has not only obtained a gift of land to build a church in St. Augustine, Texas, which their church in St. Augustine still is on that same land.
Okay.
But he also raises, in $1837, $3,500 to build the church.
Wow. Which is probably equivalent to like $100,000 or so now.
It's a good bit.
Yeah, maybe even more.
Yeah. So he gets the subscriptions to build the church. He gets the land. And he preaches and he preaches and preaches. But you know what? There's not that many people in St. Augustine, Texas in 1837. And so he travels by horse to Nacogdoches and to Crockett, Texas.
Okay.
By November 7th, 19 days later, he had already received land in all three of those cities and subscriptions to build the churches in all three cities.
Are you kidding? 19 days, he's got the kumbaya from the communities to build. And not only just build, but he got the land donated and enough money donated to build these churches?
Yes. He designed them himself. So he didn't have to pay for like an architect or anything. He designed the churches himself.
Well, that's good to know. So,
And the construction didn't start in St. Augustine until January. But part of that's because he was doing this traveling from town to town. And by November 19th, he arrives in Washington on the Brazos.
Okay.
Washington on the Brazos, of course, avid listeners of your Once Upon a Time in Texas will know.
Pretty important little piece of real estate.
Yeah, because they're history buffs. For Texas, they'll know that that was the capital of the Republic of Texas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which happens to also be kind of in or near, however you want to look at it, the Houston area.
Right.
So, and remember, travel was by horse at that time.
Let's step back a little bit. He arrives in St. Augustine what day?
On October 19th.
October 19th. Mm-hmm. And then November 19th.
Yeah.
He shows up in Washington on the Brazos.
Yeah.
Having already committed
three churches. The way that they would have done church plants in that time is the preacher would come in and start preaching. He'd gather up and he'd begin a group of people, a community of people that would become the church. The Methodist Church has always been co-led between the clergy, mm-hmm. which Littleton was, and the lay people. And so when the ministers would travel, that wouldn't mean that the church would just not exist while the preacher wasn't there. They would equip lay people in leadership. And so he started and formed three churches.
So it's kind of like, you know, hey, I'm going to be here on this Sunday. I'm going to preach, and then I'm going to work with you for a day or two to prep your sermons for the following month. And then I'll be back to kind of...
Either prep their sermons or, let's face it, if anybody is unfamiliar with this, the majority of church work is not just preaching.
Right. Oh, yeah.
In fact, the majority of Christian life and building of faith happens between the Sundays.
Absolutely.
And so there's constantly stuff to be done, but lay people can lead singing, lay people can share their testimony, lay people can explore the scripture together. What they wouldn't have been able to do would have been to serve communion or to take any official action without a clergy person being present and involved.
Gotcha. But they could also share the story about how the Easter Bunny laid a chocolate egg and resurrected Jesus and all that.
Exactly.
Right?
Jesus is coming. Quick, hide the eggs.
Yeah, right. That used to irritate my grandfather, which was he was a Methodist minister too, by the way.
Yeah.
I think I told you that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I used to do that, and then I'd also tell him, you know, Grandpa, it's time to go to work for your hour on Sunday. He'd just roll his eyes, but yeah, I always had a good time with that.
Yes.
So, all right. So he arrives. We were at Washington on the Brazos.
Yes.
He arrives November 19th, a month later, after just slam dunking Methodist churches in three towns.
And so while he arrives in Washington on the Brazos so that he can serve as the chaplain to the first Congress of the Republic of Texas.
No kidding.
Yes.
See, now that's interesting because I would assume that the first chaplain, because this was part of Mexico... I would have assumed it would have been Catholic.
You talked about motivations for the Texas Revolution.
Right.
Part of that was not just about money. It was not just about power. And it was not just about helping people. It was about, one, protecting Anglo settlers.
Sure.
And two, countering Catholicism.
Oh, because the Catholics had been here for a minute or two, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, the Spaniards, when they settled Mexico and Texas, the area that is Texas, set up missions.
Right.
And the way that they settled the area was through missions. And so the Catholic elements existed in the area, but the Republic of Texas, which was formed by the fighters that we talked about earlier that had come through by way of Tennessee, and let's just say that they weren't as friendly towards Catholics.
Fair.
And so most of the Anglo settlers that are coming in are not Catholic. They're Protestant.
Right. Okay.
Or they're atheist.
We're not saying that Catholic is bad or anything. Right, not right, at right. all. We're but just saying that most of these settlers coming in were Protestant.
And back then, there was a little more hostility between the two than there is today.
Fair enough.
Which, you know, in some households, there's still a lot of hostility.
can be.
But that doesn't mean there should be. You know, from my perspective, we're all on Team Jesus. So,
right, exactly.
But nonetheless, he serves with his buddies that he knew previously from the Masonic Lodge.
All right, I like it.
And they've invited him because he was also the chaplain of the Masonic Lodge. They invite him to come and serve as the chaplain of the First Congress of the Republic of Texas.
Now that's it. So, okay. So now we're into this guy pretty deep. He mm-hmm. he gets ordained as an elder fairly young, fairly mm-hmm. quickly.
Mm-hmm.
He comes to Texas on a whim, recruits a dude on the way who ends up being the namesake of Denton, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Starts three churches in 3 days and then becomes...
Three churches in 19 days.
19 days, sorry. Yeah. Three churches in 19 days in three separate towns.
Mm-hmm.
That are a little ways apart by horse.
Yeah, there would have been about 3 days of horseback travel,
right, between
mixed
each
in
one.
There, mixed into then, that 19-day period.
And then moseys on over to Washington on the Brazos and becomes the chaplain mm-hmm. for the First Congress.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else did this guy do? Because this isn't where he stopped.
No. So did I say that when he was in those towns, he preached three times a day?
You did. Oh, yeah, you didn't okay. say in the other two, but yeah, okay. St. Augustine.
Yeah.
Three times a day is a lot.
These days, we would consider that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you do twice a week, and you're exhausted.
Actually,
four times a week, because you got two churches, right?
No. So I do two services a week between one at each church. But one of the interesting things about that is in a letter that Littleton Fowler wrote to John Denton at one point, he was lamenting about the laziness of some of the other ministers and preachers that had been coming to the area, and as a mentor to John Denton, he feels the imperative to guide him in the right ways.
Right.
And the quote that I love to hold on to because it challenges me to do the best I can and to do more and to find ways to leverage and expand the opportunity to share
mm-hmm.
good news. Is he says to John Denton in the letter, lazy is the preacher who only preaches once a day. Not once a week.
Not once a day. Okay.
So
you need to get to work is what Littleton Fowler would tell you.
Well, because up and until I had Wesley as one of my appointments, I was only preaching once a week.
Oh.
And so, you know, it's like, well, if I'm writing this sermon and I'm delivering it to these people, if I think it's worth listening to, why wouldn't it be worth some other people listening to? Or saying it again in front of some other folks? Because, you know, back then, the people who were in the middle of town, in the street, in the early a.m., weren't necessarily the same people who were coming through town in the late afternoon.
Right. Well, and I do joke with you, but yeah, you know, yeah. about an hour mm-hmm. a week. Well, in your case, 2 hours a week. But, you know, I do know you to yes. be a very busy guy, spreading the good word, mm-hmm. going to the hospital and seeing folks.
Absolutely.
You came here all dressed in black today, and I guess fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, you're preaching a funeral this afternoon.
I'm not actually preaching the funeral this afternoon. I'm just attending.
Oh, you just okay. So well, that's.
But still, the pastoral care of showing up for people.
It's important.
Is part of it. But yeah, there's a lot more involved in being a pastor, preacher, or whatever, leading a church than the 1 hour on Sunday morning.
Yeah. Lots of bills and money and managing some people too, right? Just like any other job.
Yeah. So, at least in the Methodist church, the pastor is the administrative official of the church. What does administrative official mean? It means the CEO.
Executive director, CEO. Yeah, sure.
If in the nonprofit world, they call it an executive director. Churches are nonprofits, so you might call a pastor an executive director.
Sure.
But what it means is that we handle the administration well as the instruction and teaching and worship.
Well, let's slide back here to Littleton Fowler. Indeed. We got a little sidetracked there. I loved it. But so now he's the mm-hmm. Republic of Texas
chaplain.
And so what does he do from there?
Well, he acquires some more land.
Okay.
This land that he acquires while he's serving as chaplain is in, near, around Washington on the Brazos, a.k.a. in the Houston area.
Okay. Now, is this in payment for his chaplain service? Is like what they did?
So, for the formation of a church.
Okay. All right.
Now, in the archives at Bridwell Library at SMU, you can find a lot of information.
Hang on. SMU being?
Southern Methodist University.
Okay. Just making sure. Because we do have listeners from... I actually have a listener from Australia right now.
Okay.
Haven't heard their name, but thank you all for listening from Australia.
Southern Methodist University is in Dallas, Texas. And okay. So they have one of the best libraries. And the archives, there's a lot of historical documents.
Okay.
None of them point to the specific geolocation or coordinates of the land that he acquired in Washington on the Brazos.
Okay.
But based on all the data that is available, I have come to the conclusion that I believe the land that he acquired for building of a church during that first session of Texas Congress is the same land that the current Methodist hospital in Houston is on.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure that somebody out there, somebody who's dug through the archives of land deeds or has a little bit more specific knowledge of the Houston area specifically and the Methodist dealings there, might be able to either confirm or reject that. But based on what I've come to, that's what I believe is that same land that he acquired then is now currently where the Methodist hospital in Houston is located.
And that would make sense.
Yeah.
So, three churches, preacher for the Congress of the Republic of Texas. Now he's gotten land in Washington on the Brazos, Houston area.
Yep.
To start another church. So we're up to like four churches now.
So he stays on in Congress through the end of December. Makes it back to San Augustine. January 17th, they have a big ceremony and lay the first stone for the church in St. Augustine that they raised there.
Probably done by Masons, too, I would assume. Yep.
In June of 1838, because remember, we were in October, then November of 37, so now we're into 1838. Now we're in
June, so not even a year yet.
Right. In June... He marries a woman named Missouri Lockwood Porter.
Missouri Lockwood Porter.
Yes.
That's quite a name.
Yeah. Quite a lady, apparently.
Yeah.
It says that she's from Nacogdoches.
Okay.
She lived in Nacogdoches. She was born in Kentucky.
All right.
So they're also Anglo settlers coming who had come in to Texas.
Sure.
But you pointed out he's in Texas for less than a year. He gets married. So maybe it was love at first sight. I don't know. But they got married quick. Excuse me. Dealing with a little bit of drainage.
Yep, me too. It's all that wind that was blowing. My gosh, yes. We've got parts of New Mexico and Mexico and South Texas all blowing in here.
Mm-hmm. So he gets married to this lady. She's from kind of an affluent family. He's kind of from an affluent family. He's friends with most of the founding fathers of the state of Texas. There's an interesting thing that happens.
All right. I want to hear about this.
There's a falling out between him and John Denton.
Okay.
At some point in those coming years. And the falling out was over rumors that Littleton Fowler was engaged in land speculation. Hmm. Now, you're in the mortgage business. Do you know what land speculation means?
I always assumed it was people just speculating that this land is going to go up in value.
If I'm speculating internally, yes. If I'm thinking that if I'm posing an idea that this land is going to go up, and I'm just holding that belief internally, that is one thing. As a criminal offense, land speculation is a specific activity of the buying and selling of a particular piece of land multiple times through coordinated effort of the same parties.
So like me selling to somebody else for a little more... They sell it to somebody else for a little more. They sell it back to me.
Let's say you want your property value to go up.
Okay.
Well, let's pretend there's no property tax in Texas.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
Because right now you want the tax assessor to assume your value is low. But back then, if you're building wealth in through deeded land in this new state,
right?
The land was... issued and deeded by the Republic of Texas government to the different persons who had come into Texas to help in fighting the war and or to help in administrating and growing this new area. And so the especially the ones that fought were given large swaths of land,
right,
that were mostly empty, mostly barren, mostly frontier unsettled. Right?
Right.
If they want the value of their land to go up, same things would need to happen as if you had raw land today. Either adjacent land value increases or development happens. Now, here's why I say his streak of raising those funds and getting that land will never be recreated. Part of the reason he was given that land is because it automatically increases the value of the land around it and the whole town by establishing a church, because a church would have been known as the center of the community.
Gives the community some validity, some reason for being.
And okay. Gives reason for people to settle there.
Right, okay.
As people are moving in, they're going to want to be in a place where they can go and worship.
Gotcha. Oh, we're running a little long. We're almost at 40 minutes. That's okay.
We're almost done.
Okay.
So, it's easy for him to get land because of what it does to the value around it. John Denton and him fall out because of rumors of Littleton engaging in land speculation. There may be evidence in the Bridwell Library that I may have seen with my own eyes.
Okay.
Of three particular transactions over an 18-month period of time that all had to do with the same plot of land.
Huh.
Except it wasn't done in Littleton's name.
Well, whose name was it done in then?
Missouri Porter.
Oh, his wife. Well, that way you keep the holy man's name out of it.
She was from an affluent family, so it is possible that her family was doing that. But it also is true that it was a common practice for men to utilize their wives' names on things they wanted to keep an arm's length distance from.
Right. Okay.
So, if I want to increase your house's value, I could buy the lot of land right next to you, and I'll pay you, let's say, generic price, $10,000.
Right.
And then, 10 months later, say we sell it to another mutual friend of ours for $15,000, and then 10 months after that, I buy it from him for $20,000.
And the prices just keep going up.
And see, now, not only is that land perceived value increased, but now the value of the land your home is sitting on has gone up. That's land speculation.
Hmm. Which is illegal.
Yes. What was not only considered immoral, but in some jurisdictions, it is flat out fraud. It's illegal. That's another interesting layer to Littleton Fowler's story, is that there was that falling out over land speculation, and sitting in the archives at Bridwell Library is documents related to the same plot of land being transacted three different times. But it's in Missouri's name.
So the wife is running around doing some nefarious things. So we have to assume that that Littleton knows nothing about it.
Indeed. So he served as the first presiding elder of the Texas Annual Conference of the United Methodist Church. He also served as a delegate to the conference that split the Methodist Church into the Methodist Episcopal Church and the Methodist Episcopal South Church.
Okay.
Which made him also serving in the secondary conference that was created in the same geographical area that was Methodist Episcopal South. Unfortunately, he was in favor of the separation.
Gotcha.
And so I'm not a huge fan of that part. He, like I said earlier, lived to the ripe old age of 43, where he died at his home. But again, back in the 1800s, living to 43 was a good life.
Pretty good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe a few things that maybe tarnish him a little bit, possibly, but overall,
it's still
like good guy.
It takes a bit of skill to be able to preach that much and that well, and to build relationships with people in such a way that you have those opportunities and develop those relationships, that even if it serves the person giving self-interest, they still gave it.
Absolutely.
And so you want to honor the good intention more so than kind of the scandal about it. But
sure,
it's still a prolific time of ministry, and all three of those churches were built and lasted for a good long time. The one in St. Augustine is still open today.
That's interesting.
And it's just an incredible story about something that happened once upon a time in Texas.
Fantastic. So Littleton Fowler basically creates the foothold of Methodism.
Methodism. And, I was trying to and the, in there. The church in St. Augustine, when the cornerstone was laid for that, is believed to be the first Protestant church in the area of Texas.
All right. So he creates the foothold for Methodist in Texas, starts three churches in 19 days, becomes the chaplain for the first Congress for the Republic of Texas, starts another church, presumably, in Washington on the Brazos, Houston area, and then may have been involved in a little land speculation later in life.
Yep.
Well, that's a pretty interesting guy. I like that. Well, Jacob, I want to thank you for coming in. That's a little bit more about Once Upon a Time in Texas. Things you didn't know. The Methodist Church here. Let me know what other kind of weird, off-the-wall, interesting things you'd like to hear about. Follow me on Facebook. I've got a Once Upon a Time in Texas page and group. And, of course, you know what? It's my podcast. So, Jacob, a little bit of self-promotion here. When do you preach at Trinity and Wesley Methodist here in Wichita Falls?
Our service times currently are 10 a.m. at Trinity and 11:15 at Wesley.
Okay. And they're short, so people can get out before the Dallas Cowboys football games and make it to the restaurants before all the Baptists get there.
If you want to beat the Baptist to the restaurant, you go to Trinity. If you want to get there after they're getting up, you go to Wesley.
Okay, I like it. So, yeah, if you are here in Wichita Falls, go check out. If you're looking for a church home, go check out Trinity or Wesley. I will be checking them out myself here for too long. Jacob has invited me many times, and I've not made it yet, but I will be going. So go check it out. Let me know what else you guys want to hear about. Thank you all for tuning in to Once Upon a Time in Texas. And as always, remember, the stars at night are big and bright.
Deep in the heart of Texas.
I love it. Y'all have a great week.